Welcome, friends, to the Generations Broadcast. My name is Kevin Swanson. I'm a homeschool father of five, raising our children out here on the eastern plains of Colorado during the demise of Western civilization, the breakdown of education, the breakdown of character, the lack of preparation for young men for life. 70% of young men aren't ready for life by 30 years of age, up from 30% in 1970. That was Newsweek magazine about 3 years ago, and we've capitalized on that a number of times because, hey, if young men aren't ready for work and life and getting married and having jobs and doing things by 30 years of age, and if it's a 70% problem, it's going to affect the economy. It's going to affect future social systems. And that's why we continue to emphasize that point. Dave Buhner also here today. Dave, here's an interesting article from USA Today. Came out just over the weekend. Seems like I got a copy of this paper at my hotel room in Chicago. And here it was. It was on the front page of the newspaper. Fewer unpaid internships to be offered. They're doing less internships out there. As summer intern season draws near, many employers are doing away with unpaid internships or converting them to paid programs amid lawsuits that claim interns should have compensated for their work, labor lawyers say. They're saying we're not going to run the risks, as Al Robinson, a Washington, D.C. lawyer and former acting administrator of the Labor Department's Wage and Hour Unit. Dave, you know, I think what happened in 2009, 2010, there were way less jobs for young people in the market. So they added more unpaid internships, hopefully to get some of them into the macroeconomy. And as I said before, it takes mentorship to be able to do more networking, which enables more contracting and more work in the macro market. In other words, if you don't have young men and young women to some extent out there to take on more of the macroeconomy work, then and they're not prepared to take on the macroeconomy work because they have not been mentored and they have no skills worthwhile marketing, then you're going to wind up with less networking and a whole lot less contracting for the next generation or for the younger generation. So, Dave, you know, I think that mentorship is critical. I think it's essential. I think that the average corporation is not going to hire that many young people until they're sure that these people are marketable and have something marketable to offer to the macroeconomy.
Part of the problem here is that when you don't have a vacuum to bring in new labor, you have a bunch of trained students who have no value in the marketplace. Yeah,
they're very good at tests.
They have no value.
They have a few hypotheticals down. They've been to the university. They've been through a number of books, but they're not useful in the marketplace. I mean, the market understands this. In fact, you know, when I graduated from my college, I did pretty well at what was considered the top number one or two engineering schools in California, Cal Poly San Luis Obispo. Dave, I wasn't ready for life. I wasn't ready for work. They had to train me in their CAD system. They had to train me in their design of magnetic recording heads, where I worked at Applied Magnetics down in Santa Barbara. I went through some training programs. I mean, there were extensive corporate training programs in order to get me to the point where I could do some halfway decent work. I hadn't taken much in terms of experimental design, optimization and things of that nature. I didn't know how to do ANOVAs, analysis of variance. I didn't know how to do T-tests and F-tests. I didn't know how to do most of what was required in the workplace. I had statics and dynamics and thermodynamics and mechanical control systems and. I knew all the calculus. I knew all of that. But when it came down to what I had to do in the marketplace, where I had to produce a marketable product and I had to understand the market, and I had to understand how to design things for that particular market need, Dave, I was not ready. I was not prepared. And that company, I'm sure, had to put $60,000, $70,000, $80,000 of investment into me after my college degree in order to make me marketable and useful in that industry. So my point is that the internship and mentorship has got to happen one way or the other. The problem is your average corporation can't really front the money to do it much anymore. So unless young people are ready to work the unpaid internships, they're probably not going to be marketable in the years to come. That's why we've been pushing mentorship and internship as much as we have over the last 4 to 5 years of our ministry. I mean, I believe this is absolutely essential if we're going to get our kids out of the tarmac and onto the runway and off and making enough money to sustain their families in the years to come. Mentorship is essential. And for some reason, American companies are abandoning that vision.
Well, Kevin, this is going to have huge societal consequences. We've already seen the shift from an apprenticeship economy where people were trained through apprenticeships. And by the way, A dad would often pay to send his son to work for a master to learn a trade. Yeah. And so the apprentice wasn't paid. Now, we've turned all that upside down. We've got child labor laws, and we insist everybody get paid rather than just get paid in knowledge. Instead, we pay professors to teach us something to get a piece of paper, which doesn't prepare us for the workforce. When right now we have a situation where it is much cheaper to outsource that mentorship to India. In other words, to hire people to do the work that you might have had junior people doing and bringing them up. This is horrible news for our U.S. economy.
Dave,
this is disastrous.
I think the expectations probably for the average college graduate way too high. They expect way too much. I mean, here they're getting these internships and then they sue the employers. So the employers don't want to do internships anymore because there's no trust there that has been built up over the years. And Dave, as you know, this is just not going to work. I mean, here's an example. Last month, Zhu Dang Wong, an unpaid intern at Harper's Bazaar in 2011, sued parent Hearst, saying she shuttled fashion samples between the magazine and vendors, among other menial tasks. This is the kind of work that's done by a paid fashion assistant, Wang said, 28 years of age, in the interview. So, Dave, I mean, you know,
gratitude.
You got total lack of gratitude. Really, really, really high expectations. They feel like they're worth, you know, once they've paid three times the CPI for their college education, you know, again, the college costs are three times the CPI over the last 30 to 40 years. So there's a huge increase in the amount of money and the amount of debt required to pay for a college degree. Now they feel like they got to get out and they got to make their $80,000 a year. But as it turns out, the first pay for the first senior graduate who's come out of the average college is making maybe even a little less money adjusted for inflation than they were back in the 1970s and 1980s. And that does not compensate for the increase in college costs and the increase in debt they've paid to get through that college program. So, you know, I mean, I understand why their expectations are high, but I'm sorry, but this economy is not going to sustain this. And you're going to have to get out there and do mentorships. Dave, I'd say early on, 17, 18, 19, 20 years of age, these young men especially need to be out there doing the internships and getting the mentorships under their belt. And that's one reason why we're doing as much mentorship as we're doing. Been doing it for 6 years here in the Generations Ministry.
Kevin, the best college is the college of experience. You go out and do something, make mistakes while it's safe. You know, while you're at home where it's not going to cost a Third World War III or a bankruptcy or something like that. I encourage men to take these risks, to find themselves somebody who knows more, who's been down the road a little farther, and learn what they can from them. That'll teach them, amongst other things, humility and hard work. These are two things that I believe are generally lacking from our college graduates these days: humility and hard work. And when a person is out there learning in the school of experience, these lessons are more likely to stick with them through life.
And Dave, again, I believe that we need to go even beyond the internships. We got to get beyond the 3-month co-op ed summer programs where there's no relationships developed. There's no real interest in overseeing somebody and focusing on their character and life, integrating them and doing the things that we believe constitute a really hardcore, absolutely essential form of mentorship. That's not happening out there, friends. What we recommend is a 1-year minimum, hopefully, ideally 2 to 3 year mentorship where that young man is working with that older man, and that older man is showing him how to do it. He's life integrating the guy. He's focusing on this character, and the relationship is enough that they can sustain a little bit of focus on character and hopefully honing the character of that young man as he makes it into the macroeconomy and hopefully becomes productive enough to have a household of his own.
Kevin, you could do what Jesus did. You could take some handpicked people, work with them for 3 years, give them experiences, send them out to villages 2x2 occasionally.
Yeah, sure.
Let them observe your ways, walk with you, talk with you, sleep with you, do everything with you. And then after about 3 years, you're about ready to send them out, given the power of the Holy Spirit.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, the methodology we speak of is a relationship-driven thing. It involves, and this is where I think it's very important, Dave. It involves phileo love and agape love, and something that Jesus spoke of all the time with his disciples. Very, very foreign to your average person out there. Because, Dave, I know what a lot of people are thinking. They're thinking if there is some kind of a relationship between an older man and a younger man, there's got to be some eros involved. And of course, that's the Greek model. The Greek model involves some horrific concepts, some horrific behavior. And it's something we can't speak of on the air here. But a lot of folks don't want the idea of an older man mentoring a younger man because of the Greek model. But again, we're not talking about the Greek model. We're talking about the Jesus model. It deals with purity, that deals with a willingness to give up your time and your energy and even some of your resources for a young man and his success out there, and a willingness to disciple him and focus on his character. And I know that's something very, very foreign to the average person, but we've got to learn how to establish these relationships. We need to learn how to disciple within the context of these relationships and stop the idea of sending our kids off to institutionalized educational facilities where nobody really gets to know them and nobody knows their character and nobody really cares about their character and nobody really wants to hone their character. No. That's the wrong form of education. We're talking about an entirely different form of education, one that comes from the Word of God. I've summarized it in my book, Upgrade the 10 Secrets to the Best Education for Your Child. I recommend that book to you if you're raising sons or daughters. God's form of education involves a discipleship, a focus on the character of that young man or young woman. And I recommend mentorship during the later years, 17, 18, 19, 20 years of age. I would recommend men mentoring young men and women mentoring young women. That's my one recommendation. Why? Because, again, we're not playing the game of the deranged, defective form of eros that that is exercised out there in the marketplace today. There's inappropriate relationships everywhere and workplaces all over America, and we don't recommend that at all. We recommend a biblical form of relationship where there's discipleship involved, where there's good, solid mentorship happening, and hopefully the preparation of young men and young women for life and for eternity. Be back in just a moment to talk a little bit more about what's happening with relationships in the present day. Relationships are very, very, very cold to the point where people are suing each other for every other thing. And there are very, very few good, solid relationships within families, within your average person's life today. And we're going to talk about what's happening out there in terms of human relationships in just a moment. This is Kevin Swanson. The program is Generations.
Hey, church leaders, are the parents in your church doing the basics in the home? I'm not talking about changing their children's diapers and feeding them three square meals a day. I'm talking about the basics, the Word of God. I'm talking about the book of Proverbs. If this is God's curriculum for kids, if this is God's book for providing knowledge, wisdom, and understanding to a young man or a young woman, then the parents in your churches need to be inculcating these lessons into their children. That's why I produced a 3-volume family Bible study series on the book of Proverbs, specifically for parents who, by the way, are the God-appointed teachers according to the book of Proverbs. All right, pastors, elders, leaders, I'd like to encourage you to take this challenge. Instead of purchasing Sunday school materials this year, as most churches do, why not distribute our family Bible study guides on Proverbs to every family in your church? We'll be happy to provide you with bulk prices at generationswithvision.com. Churches all over America are providing family Bible study guides to their families as a means of encouraging families to this vitally important responsibility. Contact us through generationswithvision.com for bulk prices or order your copy today at generationswithvision.com.
We're back on the Generations broadcast. Kevin Swanson, your host, with you today, talking to a lost and lonely world. That's what characterizes our world. Lost without any absolutes, without any sense of any kind of absolute truth that could tether us in a snowstorm in Antarctica to some kind of absolute. That's not happening today, but we're also lonely. The modern world is lonely. A statistic I read last week, Dave, was nine times the percentage of people living alone today as did 100 years ago. Nine times the percentage of people living alone. There have been a number of articles come out. Fortune magazine did about a 20-page spread on the lonely person and the person living alone. And there's a big market for them. They're consumers. They run everything into debt. They buy, they buy, they buy. They have no future. They have no generational legacy. They have nothing but themselves and their ability to consume. And that's a new market. And Fortune magazine says it's time to capitalize on the lonely market. But 9 times the percentage of people living alone as did 100 years ago. I think the existentialism of Jean-Paul Sartre, who wrote Hell is Other People, has really kicked in. And Dave, this is sort of the zeitgeist. This is the spirit of the age.
Well, Kevin, 100 years ago, I think the only people who were living alone were like Jeremiah Johnson and a couple of widowers.
Yeah.
And most of them would move in
right.
with their family. But, right. you know, now it's very common for people who get elderly and they become widowed just to stay, keep the place, oh. keep the place to themselves.
51% of marriageable women are living alone. 51% of marriageable women are single. They're not getting married. So and I think that's a record. And that there may not be any other time or any other place in all of human history that could equate to what's happened in the last 40 to 50 years. Shows you the power of worldviews. I mean, you know, Sartrean worldviews, especially in motion pictures. I think probably the area in which, well, it's motion pictures and music. Once people got their iPods and the earphones, remember there were no earphones prior to about 1950, which means that most music had to be experienced in community. I mean, had to be experienced in the community. Today, people, just the last 50 years, people have lived a very, very isolated, existentialistic, lost in the city sort of a world view or social view. And it's just been the last 50 years when that's happened. Dave, and there's been some other interesting things that have resulted. And these articles have come recently in a number of different sources. Time magazine did something on this a while back on pets. People have more dogs now than children in America. More households, more families, or more couples or more singles have dogs than they have children. They're raising dogs and cats. In fact, there are some, I got the statistics here somewhere, there are some 93 million cats and 78 million dogs. So the cats have outnumbered the dogs. But the market for this is just through the ceiling. In 2009, $45 billion for this market for pets. $45 billion. And for the... For pets in 2012, just 3 years later, it grew to $53 billion. That's an increase of about 20%. So it's an $8 billion increase in 3 years, a 20% increase in expenditure for pets in just the last 3 years for a total of $53 billion in 2012. That's the expected market for pet supplies, pet food, pet, you name it. This is the business to be in. I mean, I know so many people, including ourselves, that are raising dogs, mm-hmm. you know, for the market. I mean, you know people in your church, I think,
yes.
are raising dogs.
I absolutely.
Mean, the whole idea of raising dogs and having your own kennel is humongous for those who want family-based economies. It's a wonderful opportunity. And we've been enjoying our husky because Rebecca Joy wants to raise huskies for this burgeoning market.
Well, Kevin, this is one of the few areas where the government doesn't have total control.
Now, yeah.
Soon we'll have government
sure.
schools, obedience schools for our dogs.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
And we'll have government health care for our dogs. But
sure.
for right now, this is an area that's not too regulated, you know.
Yeah, sure.
America's gone to the dogs,
sure.
and so far the American government hasn't caught up.
And, you know, somebody else in our church is doing pet washes. If the car washes, and, you know, they added pet washes a couple, 4 or 5 years ago, and this guy says the pet wash business is booming. It's the one thing that's keeping him afloat in the present market. And, Dave, you know why? The present civilization is dying. This present social system is dying. 9 times the percentage of people living alone as did 100 years ago. You have to make money off of the people living alone, and a lot of people are out there making money off of it. Dave, not to say that this is the right way to live life. We would like to see people live more in community. We'd like people to have families. We'd like something better than 1.2 children per family. We would like to see something besides 80 countries around the world birth imploding. But in the meantime, I guess we got to sell apples and dog food to people who live by themselves with their dog.
Well, yeah, I'm not against people capitalizing, and I like dogs.
In fact, Mark Searcy's in here laughing his head off because his daughter is involved in this business too.
Yeah, she raises German Shepherds. So
sure.
if you want a very expensive Lutheran dog, and you know, go see
sure.
Lisa Searcy. Easy for me to say. Kevin, dogs have so many advantages for the lost and lonely world. For instance, you don't have to get doggy daycare. Although I've heard of doggy daycare. No,
there's doggy daycare. There's doggy. In fact, we've done some doggy daycare. People in the city, in Elizabeth, have come to us, said $100 a week can take care of our dog. And I think it's $200 a week. It's something unbelievable. And my daughters were raking in the, we had to go out and get rakes to rake in more cash because these kids are taking care of these dogs for 50, 60, 80 bucks a day. It's amazing what you can do with the doggy business.
You'll need the rakes for something else too.
Well, yeah, we use that too. But you know, there are some benefits to pets, you know, as a substitute for children. I mean, you think about it, you don't have to do biblical conflict resolution with pets. And there's one benefit. The pets, you know, if you get really, really mad, I guess you could kill your dog and you don't have to go to prison for 20 years unless your neighbor happens to be a member of PETA. I guess that would be a problem. Then you probably would have to go to jail for at least 5 or 6 years for killing a dog. But if you got really upset with your dog, I mean, you know, you could kill your dog. In a relationship-less world where people have no control over their emotions and people have no ability to make peace and to live at peace one with another. And that's the world we live in. We live in a world that just can't do relationships. And so what do? You live in institutions and then you have a pet, maybe.
Well, one of the great things about pets is you know who's in charge. Well, unless you have a cat, and then all bets are off. Yeah. But, you know, when you look at the dog doesn't try and say, well, I'm the head of this household. No, we're going to do things my way. You know, the dog pretty much understands who the master is, and people like that kind of structure. Well,
another thing nice about dogs is you can get them fixed so they don't get pregnant out of wedlock. I mean, that, you know, you have teen pregnancy issues, and you have to pay for the abortions and all that, but you can get your pets fixed for 40, 50 bucks. I mean, that's a good deal. That beats the day after pill. I think that beats one day after pill for your teenage daughter. Now, again, a little bit tongue in cheek here, but friends, understand that's the way people live their lives right now. Why would you want to have a daughter? Why would you want to have a son when they're just going to get pregnant out of wedlock? If they get mouthy, I suppose you could get their vocal cords fixed, at least for dogs.
You know? Yeah, they do. Arf, 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 you know, and they just make that sound all the time. Arf, 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 arf. You could talk to your dog, and your dog doesn't really care what you're saying as long as you're talking to it. It doesn't care if you have bad breath or not, because it's worse. Breath is worse.
Dave, dogs never come home and say, Dad, I'm gender confused. I'm just not sure if I'm a boy or a girl. I've never heard a dog say that. Dogs are seldom gender confused.
Seldom. No.
At least the dogs we've had.
They lack initiative.
Never had a dog that had gender confusion.
They do lack initiative, though. I mean, because if a dog has initiative, like say he's digging up the backyard, you know, he's using what God gave him, and he's going to go take some dominion over the earth. We usually try and train that out of them.
You know, and obedience is easier for dogs.
Oh, yes.
Not so much for cats, but for dogs. Obedience, much easier for dogs than for kids. I mean, maybe 5-6 months obedience school?
Oh,
tops?
You can get a dog housebroken in a couple of months, and it takes years to get a child housebroken.
I know, because, you see, children have this Grandpa Adam issue. And so now you got to work through that. Then you've got to get the redemption of Christ and regeneration and that thing going, you know, in the life of a child. Don't have to worry about that with a dog.
No. With a child, just when you think you got them toilet trained, a few years later, they enter their teens and you're back to housebreaking all over again. With the dog, once he's housebroken, he's generally housebroken. Now, cats, like you say, cats are a whole different thing. You don't change cats.
So many benefits for dogs, my friends. In a age where relationships are dead, because Sartre said hell is other people. You notice John Paul Sartre never said hell is other dogs. He said hell is other people. That is, it's people that's a problem for the existentialist who is so self-oriented and so myopic that he can't see past his own nose to the next generation and to the next and to the next. That's why John Paul Sartre said hell is other people. He said, none of these people in his life. And that's why, Dave, I think we're far more existentialistic today than we were even 10 years ago. I did the research on Planned Parenthood's website, and you can get their annual report. And Dave, there are 5 times the incidence of this emergency contraception than their surgical abortions that they perform. In other words, they're administering way, I think they administer some 200, 250,000 abortions, but just Planned Parenthood alone is administering something like 1.3, 1.4 million day after pills, which means there are 5 times the incidence of abortion going on now than were in the 1990s. I mean, we're talking 8 million abortions a year.
So we're not talking about 5,000 a day.
No. We're not talking about, that's right. We're not talking 5,000 a day anymore. We're talking about 40,000 a day. We're talking about way more abortions. at least 8 million abortions going on in this country in any given year, up from about 1.5 million back in the 1990s. Friends, I mean, this is crazy what's going on. People are killing way more of their kids, way more of their kids today. They kill their kids right and left all the time using the day after pill and surgical abortions and even the abortifacient birth control pill, which as you know, Dave, I mean, even the birth control pill has its abortifacient qualities and people are willing to take that risk. I mean, they're willing. We're talking Christians out there are willing to kill their kids just for the convenience of not having to deal with people, because people's the problem in the modern age. Other people is the problem for the Sartrean existentialist. And friends, that's the way people live their lives. That's the zeitgeist. That's the spirit of the age. It's lonely. It's really lonely. And guess what? When 80 million baby boomers retire after aborting 80 million babies, you really think that the next generation is aborting less and will euthanize less? Dave, I think euthanasia is coming as quickly as you can imagine, but at least they'll still have their dog for company.
Euthanasia will come in one form or another. It'll come as medical euthanasia, or we'll have a war, or we'll have a disease or something that isn't quite opposed. It's got to come. Yeah. The economics demand it. Kevin, when you talk about the relationship, when you talk about the dogs, when you talk about really what we're talking about is a loss of love for children. We hate children in this country. You know, children aren't welcome a lot of places. Mm-hmm. You can't take them everywhere.
Yeah, I know. I mean, you know, a friend of ours was trying to find a rental. And he had a hardest time finding a rental in the Douglas County area here in the South Metro, Colorado, Denver area. Dave, it was so incredibly difficult for him to find a place. When they found out he had 5, 6, 7 kids, he said, forget you. We don't have any place for you. I mean, it's really hard right now for guys who have a few children to find a rental. They want to have the little yuppie couple who comes and lives and maybe has their dog, maybe doesn't have a dog, but lives effectively a very, very isolationistic corporate artistic, institutionalized life where they maybe sleep in the bedrooms, maybe, but most of the time they're out of the house. They're not soiling the carpets. They're not using these houses for anything. And that's the sort of lifestyle that people are interested in. They're not interested in raising the next generation. And our society is not really all that open to children. I mean, they're willing to institutionalize them.
Right.
They don't really want to do anything but that.
Yeah, kind of like they do with the elderly. Look, when you take your child shopping, you go to Home Depot. What do you hear over the loudspeaker constantly? You know, we basically don't want children, but if you have children, keep them strapped in the cart and don't let them touch anything. Yeah. And then the same thing everywhere. You've gone to the supermarket and other people look at you with disdain.
Oh, yeah.
Because you're disturbing their personal peace.
Especially if you have more than 2.1 kids. I mean, if you have more than 2.1, you walk in with 2.2 children, you know, two children and then a little 0.2 kid walking beside you. They come unglued. I mean, they come unglued. What are you trying to do? You're trying to provide for the next generation? I mean, we're trying to birth implode over here. We want to euthanize a Social Security bankrupt system by the year 2040. I mean, come on, what's up with you? I mean, that's sort of the response I get on a fairly regular basis when I bring 4 to 5 of my children into a restaurant or a supermarket.
Because the earth's running out of resources and they're all mine.
Yeah, exactly.
You just try and get a hotel room. For a large family.
Oh, man, it's hard to do. That's really, really hard to do. We should probably also say that there is a biblical worldview perspective concerning dogs.
Well, absolutely. I mean,
the Bible has a lot to say about dogs. Not a lot of positive things to say about dogs. There is one reference to a pet in the Bible, and that is, of course, Nathan's parable concerning the family that had the little sheep that was in the house, and the children liked the little sheep, and then the sheep wound up becoming dinner for the master. So it wasn't really a good story, but it didn't work out really well for the sheep, but it was a pet. And I think the Bible allows for pets. The Bible also doesn't want us running around killing our cats and dogs and doing cruel things to our cats and dogs. We're supposed to take good care of our animals. But they're also supposed to be somewhat productive for us, Dave. And I think more and more animals aren't really all that productive except to take the place of human relationships. And that's probably a negative.
Well, it is a negative. I mean, dogs do offer some companionship and some recreation, playing fetch, but they were originally bred for certain tasks. I prefer the working dogs and the hunting dogs.
Yeah.
They actually have things to do. I know the terriers are supposed to be able to be helpful around the home with pests and some other things. But, you know, we have these little handbag dogs. Have you seen these people?
Oh, man.
Women have these, like, purse, and there's a dog hanging out of her purse.
Little rats. They look like little rats.
And in Colorado Springs, it's not mm-hmm. unfrequent when I see someone where there's like a poodle with its paws up on the steering wheel. Like the dog has a license to drive, and that's a little disturbing.
It's kind of scary. Okay, folks, a little bit of a discussion on the worldview of pets today. Again, the Bible allows for this, and I think we ought to take good dominion over God's creation and enjoy God's creation. It's appropriate for us to have dogs and cats to enjoy some aspect of God's creation and give God the glory for it. That's one other reason why we would have our pets, and we do have some cats and some dogs and a turtle, and it seems like our menagerie has been growing over the years as our children get older, but we also have a use for them, and we certainly are into breeding as well, and hopefully raising some dogs that are useful and helpful for other families as well.
Yeah, we take dominion over God's creatures. You know, you used to have a ferret or something in the house. You're taking dominion over it. We're learning to use these animals. But when it comes to dogs, generally speaking, the Bible speaks of them negatively. The last reference is in Revelation, and I think this kind of encapsulates the whole biblical worldview of dogs. But outside are dogs and sorcerers and sexual immoral people and murderers. You know, so dogs are right out there with the lawyers. And this is a note. Dogs are outside. Just a note for all you dogs out there. You are outside.
Gussie's not going to appreciate that, Dave. Gussie does not appreciate that. But we're beginning to limit the range of Gussie within the house these days for, I think, obvious reasons. I think you've noted some of those reasons.
We should tell the audience that Gussie is your beagle.
Yes, Gussie's the beagle. Yes. Gussie has had a place in the home for the last 9 or 10 years of our lives.
And Gussie is proof that God has a sense of humor.
Yes, that's correct. Well, ladies and gentlemen, you've been listening to the Generations Radio broadcast. I hope this has been somewhat educational for you. Again, there are uses, there are good uses for the good things that God has given to us, but we have to be careful. Let's make sure we're always bringing a biblical social view to things. Our purpose is not to live alone. Our purpose is to live with other people, to work through issues, and yes, engage in conflict resolution, and yes, engage in relationships that are messy, and yet those messy relationships are productive, really productive for our sanctification and for the mentorship of the next generation. We need relationships, and we need to get back into more relationships, even if they are messy. And our solution to our relational issues are the biblical conflict resolution and being willing to deal with our sinful problems between one another. And that's something that a lot of people want to avoid entirely, but we're willing to do it. And the relationships that we win in the process are priceless, just priceless. Well, you can interact with the program by emailing me directly at host@kevinswanson.com. You can also hear the program anytime, anywhere in the world at kevinswanson.com. This is Kevin Swanson inviting you back again next time as we continue to lay down a vision for the next generation.